behalf of Lineberg Information Services, welcome to Prepare or Not to Prepare, a brief review of how to avoid preparer and taxpayer penalties. This is Bob Keebler, and joining us today is Michael Goller, a prominent tax attorney from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
Michael, there are a lot of issues here, and we only have a short period of time, but let's start with, are only the individuals who sign a tax return considered preparers? What about a CPA or lawyer who gives advice to another CPA or lawyer who actually signs the return?
No, Bob, that's a classic trap for the unwary. The concept that only a signing preparer is a return preparer. A preparer can either be a signing or a non-signed preparer. Any person who prepares or gives advice regarding the preparation of a substantial portion of a tax return is deemed to be a return preparer under the code and is potentially subject to penalty under 6694 for preparer penalties.
So basically, even if I do not sign a return but I consult on the signing position, I'm probably a preparer.
That's correct. And the safe thing to do is assume you are a preparer. If you're giving advice, as I always say, if you're using your noggin, you're given advice, assume you are a return preparer, which means assume you are potentially subject to 6694 and also the ethical obligations under Circular 230.
So a lawyer that consults on a gift tax position for a trust the lawyer drafted, or a lawyer that does a purchase price allocation in some type of acquisition, they could potentially be preparers?
That is correct. And as I said, that's a classic trap for the unwary. They tend to think, I'm giving advice, but I'm not signing the tax return. I don't have any exposure. But in fact, the IRS has made it very clear that they, in fact, do have exposure.
Michael, one of the things I'm always concerned about, and I think most practitioners are, is whether we're going to be subject to a preparer penalty under 6694A or even the 20% penalty under 6662. So walk me through this. The way I understand the law is there's frivolous returns, there's reasonable basis returns, there's substantial authority returns, and there's more likely than not returns. I know all those things have a specific meaning, but how do I know when I have a reasonable basis or substantial authority, and why is that important?
Great, Bob. Let's stand back. 6694 sub A is the non-willful preparer penalty, and as you said, the standards under there are frivolous, reasonable basis, substantial authority, and then more likely than not. You cannot prepare a frivolous return, either as a signing preparer or a non-signing preparer. You just simply can't do it. What does it mean to be frivolous? Most practitioners will say a return is frivolous if the position taken on the return has a confidence level of, say, 5% or less. And that's not a hard and fast number, but that's a fairly good estimate. Then we go up to the next level, and it's reasonable basis. In other words, is there a reasonable basis for the tax treatment on the tax return? And if that is, in fact, the case, then you can prepare the return either as a signing or non-signing preparer as long as you have a reasonable basis and you attach a disclosure to the return. Reasonable basis, again, is not a mathematically defined formula in the code, in the regs, but most practitioners would say it's maybe 20-25% confidence level. So if I can get to that 20-25% confidence level, and then I attach a disclosure to the tax return on a form 8275 or an 8275R, or pursuant to the annual revenue procedure that says for these specific items, you need to disclose in the following manner. And I think one of the last revenue proxy comes out early in the year, 2011-13, gives those specific items. Then I can prepare the return. So I get the reasonable basis, and then I jump through the correct hoops to attach a disclosure. Going to the next level, then, the next level up, substantial authority. If I can get to the substantial authority level, then I needn't attach a disclosure unless we're talking about a tax shelter or a reportable transaction. And substantial authority, again, is not mathematically defined in the code or the regs, but most practitioners would say it's a comfort level of around 40%. So if I can get to that loosey-goosey 40% comfort level and it's not a tax shelter or a reportable transaction, I can prepare the return either as a signing preparer or non-signing preparer without disclosure. And then finally, the last standard, if it is a tax shelter or reportable transaction, then I have to get to more likely than not, which is more than 50%. So that is a mathematical formula. So that's a quick overview of the regime we're talking about to avoid a prepare penalty under 6694.
So, Michael, 2 points. One is, what is the technical definition of a tax shelter? And then follow up with that with, how do we know if we have a reportable transaction?
Got it. A tax shelter, this is a trap for the unwary, because if you ask most practitioners, they'll say, hey, I don't engage in tax shelters. I just don't do that. But if you look at the code section, basically translated into plain English, a tax shelter is a transaction that has a significant purpose of avoiding or evading income tax. Well, a lot of what we do has a significant purpose of avoiding income tax, and the code section is on 6662 sub D 2C II. So it may be that we are planning tax shelters and we don't think of it as such, but in fact, a lot of what we do has the purpose of avoiding income tax. So in that case, you know, I may be under the more likely than not standard. You also asked, you know, Bob, what is a reportable transaction? The IRS lists, it has a concept of reportable transactions. Within that, there are certain categories. For example, listed transactions is a subset of reportable transaction, and other types of transactions are also reportable transactions. They're, quote, bad in the IRS's view. And if you have one of those, number one, you probably want to just stay away from it. But if you feel, you know, I want to challenge this transaction, you know, then again, you're under the more likely than not standard in terms of preparing the tax return.
So what about, I know there's a difference here and it's hard to define, but walk me through the difference between the standard on an opinion letter, when basically we have to get to a more likely than not position, compared to simply having substantial authority, which gives you the ability to sign a return unless it's a tax shelter or reportable transaction.
Good point. The opinion letters are governed by the covered opinion rules, and we remember those. They came out in, I think, 2005, and they're the reason we have all these little legends on the bottom of our emails to legend out of the IRS covered opinion rules contained in Circular 230, Section 10.35, I believe. Under those, if I'm going to issue a covered opinion, I have to get the more likely than not to issue the opinion. And the reason is the IRS wants solid return, wants solid opinions. On the other hand, to prepare a tax return, if it's not a tax shelter or a reportable transaction, I need to get the substantial authority, which is less than more likely than not. So I could prepare the return as long as I get the substantial authority without attaching a disclosure. And my client, you know, let's switch gears a little bit. You mentioned at the top of the call, 6662, the penalty for clients, the accuracy-related penalty under 6662. If I want to avoid that penalty in most situations, if I can get the substantial authority, again, this loosey-goosey 40% confidence level, then my client should be able to avoid that penalty as well. So the standard for issuing a tax opinion is, in fact, higher than the standard you would normally be subject to when you prepare a tax return.
Michael, we've covered a lot of ground, but I have one other difficult issue for us to talk about. Let's talk about Form 8938. That's this new foreign bank account, foreign asset disclosure form. And I realize the seriousness of the form, but what I didn't realize until last several weeks is that if that form is not submitted, the statute of limitations on the entire return does not run until Form 8938 is actually filed.
That's correct. The statute doesn't start to run. Form 8938 is titled Statement of Specified Foreign Financial Assets. And as you know, Bob, right now, foreign bank accounts, foreign assets are a hot issue. You know, we talk about the FBAR form. We talk about checking the box on the Form 1040 as to whether you have a bank account balance with more than $10,000. And now there's this new form, Form 8938, which says that in certain situations, if you have certain foreign financial assets that exceed a certain dollar amount, usually it's $50,000 or $75,000 anytime during the tax year, or $50,000 on the last day of the year, then you've got to file this Form 8938, and it will be filed with your tax return. It'll be just a form attached to the tax return, generally speaking. But the trap for the unwary is, if it doesn't get filed, and this very potentially may be missed, if it doesn't get filed, then the statute of limitations on assessment on that entire tax return doesn't start to run until it gets filed. So an inadvertent error where somebody just missed this, and in particular, let's say you have a situation where a CPA is preparing a tax return, the client fills out the tax organizer and simply checks no when the question is asked, do you have a foreign bank balance? So it doesn't get caught. The return is prepared. It's all correct in every other respect, or at least the attempt is to make it correct in every other respect. But this form is not attached to the return. Then the statute of limitations on assessment won't even start to run. So that's going to be a trap for the unwary during the current filing season.
Michael, I just want to make sure I have this right. I have a return with $3 million worth of income, all kinds of positions that could go either way. I failed to file the 8938, and 20 years later, the government can still look at that return?
Generally, yes, unless you can make some argument under some equitable doctrine like laches or something else. The statute's very clear and that you need to file this form for the statute to start to run with respect to the entire tax return.
Now, let's say that I figure out 3 years from now that I've never filed. I can simply then make an autonomous filing of Form 8938, and then the statute starts to run?
You would file the return. Presumably, I think you would file an amended tax return with this form attached to it, and that would start the clock running.
Well, Michael, we've covered a lot of ground. I just want to summarize for preparers that are out there. In the next 6 weeks, we're going to prepare a lot of tax returns. Watch out for the penalties, especially the preparer penalty, and watch out for whether you're meeting the reasonable basis requirement where you can prepare a return with a disclosure, the substantial authority position where there's no need to disclose unless a tax shelter or a reportable transaction exists, and finally, there's no need for disclosure whatsoever if you have a more likely than not position. On behalf of Lineberg Information Services, this has been Bob Keebler with our special guest, Michael Goller.
Hey. Okay.